Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me right now is Gordon Glantz. And we, the Phillies, completed a sweep of the Rockies, winning 7-6 today, hanging on for that win. But this is going to be an Eagles-heavy show, and we are going to start right off, Gordon, with the news that came out yesterday that Carson Wentz has a hairline fracture of a rib sustained during Thursday's 17-9 win over the Bucks in the preseason opener. What impact does this have on Carson Wentz's development?
I think that they give it a timetable how long he's going to be out. I mean, any snap he's going to miss, whether it's on the practice field or in a preseason game, is just, this is when he's going to get his playing time now. I mean, he's not going to, according to the script that's laid out, he's not going to get much playing time when the season begins, although the way the offensive line looks, they may end up with me or you at quarterback before it's all over. Brad Gable's doing anything, maybe they can call him up again. But, it's just any time he's going to miss because of it, it's just not good. He did some good things in the game. He did some things I think he'd like to have back, and he said that after the game. But, I think he'd like to get back out there and correct those things. And if he's not able to do that, and I'm sure they're going to err on the side of caution. Hairline fracture or rib reminds me of the Greg Brady injury, if correct me if I'm wrong, where he could play if he wanted to, but his mother wouldn't let him, so he became the team photographer for a while. And I hope that's not Carson Wentz. I'd rather see him on the field than be his team photographer. So, when you look at it, will it be the fifth year of his career, and we'll say, oh, he never should have gotten a hairline fracture in his first preseason game. And that really cost him time. I don't think it's going to be that severe. It's not like a knee or anything like that. But anything that's going to keep him from practicing or from being in a game, at this point, every snap he takes is valuable. So, it's not anything to be celebrating about.
We have Josh Landsberg on the line as well. So, Josh, following up on what Gordon said there, I think the only chance he really has of playing in the preseason now is going to be that last game against the Jets on September 1st, the garbage fourth game, but it won't be garbage if he's playing. But if he does not play during the rest of the preseason, Josh, does that change the timetable? So the timetable Doug Peterson had laid out was, as Gordon just said, Wentz get a lot of action preseason, and then pretty much, the plan is for him to be inactive on game day. Does this, if he doesn't play in the preseason, does this delay his appearance in a game, or conversely, could it actually speed up the process of getting him in a game because he's not going to get the reps during preseason?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would go with the former rather than the latter. I think that it is going to slow down his chance to get into a game a little bit, because he's going to have to continue to learn the offense, and he's not going to be able to play or practice really with that rib injury. So I think it really hurts. Gordon touched on a lot of the points. It really hurts, literally and figuratively, that he's going to be out for this time. Hopefully he gets back to that fourth preseason game. Doug Peterson did say there's a chance he could come back before the preseason's out, so that would be nice if he could get back in there. But I was thinking, after watching him in the first preseason game and he did some things well. He did some things he could work on still. But, it could be a situation where, similar to when Doug Peterson was the quarterback and Donovan McNabb was the number two overall pick, and he was the quarterback of the future. He ended up getting in, I believe, the ninth or tenth game that season and taking over for Doug Peterson on a team that wasn't really very good. You could see a similar thing happen this season, or before this injury happened. You could have seen a similar thing happen if Carson Wentz played really well in the preseason. Maybe Sam Bradford gets hurt, hopefully not, but maybe he gets hurt, or maybe he's not playing well, or the team's not playing well, and then Carson Wentz gets in there, midway through the season. So I think it does slow down his timetable. I think he's probably going to be he might get into some games, late in games in garbage time, whether they're down by a lot or up by a lot in certain games, that could happen. But I think that it's unfortunate for him that he did suffer this injury and is not going to be able to participate in most of the preseason. And I think that slows down his timetable to get in there during the regular season.
Excellent point, Josh, because for those that were, you know, saying, all right, Bradford's the starter, but, you know, we're going to see Wentz, you know, somewhere midway through the season or, again, maybe game 9 and 10, like you said, following the Doug Peterson, Donovan McNabb scenario. Gordon, as Josh put it, if he doesn't play in the preseason, that, you know, barring a season-ending injury to Bradford, this pretty much ends any possibility of that happening, doesn't it?
I think so. Unless, like Josh said, I mean, the third quarterback can play in the fourth quarter. So, you know, if there are games where they're way up or way down, I don't see them being way up in too many games. So, you hope they're not way down in too many games. You can just stick your fourth quarterback in there. So you can get his feet wet, but it's not the same type of thing. They're not meaningful snaps. They're just, he kind of gets maybe some of those jitters over with, but it wouldn't be the same as preparing to be a starter anyway. I don't think he was, I don't think he was going to play this year anyway. It's just the only thing he's going to miss out on is, you know, he would have a lot of work that he put in this preseason, practice field and games, to keep in mind as he went through the season, as he did to look at the film and then kept working on it during practice, which he can do once he comes back, and then have next preseason to play as well. But it would have been his second preseason of playing, not his first. So in many ways, he's going to be kind of a rookie next year, which, you know, if anybody thought this may affect him starting next season as a starter. Next season may be the season where you have that Doug Peterson McNabb scenario, and not this season. Not that I expected it to be this season, but any fantasies of it being this season, I think, are pretty much gone now. You know, unless there's something like 1-8 after 9 games, then maybe you reconsider that. But really, I think next season, now you could look at, you know, maybe Sam Bradford not being here, and then you have like Chase Daniel kind of holding down that job for half the season, and then Wentz going in. I think this injury could create that scenario as opposed to Wentz starting game one next year. So the whole thing's unfortunate, and but, you know, football injury is part of football. They could call some design runs for him. I guess you could go back and question that. I don't know which play. I do know which play he got hurt on, which had nothing to do with a run. But, these things happen. They spent a lot on him. This is, again, why I'm not in favor of really giving up the ranch for anybody, really, because almost anything can happen once you're live in a game. And, you know, and you can't really build like a fortress around the guy either. You try with an offensive line, but we know how that goes. So even if the good offensive line, you know, your quarterback's going to take some hits. So it's an unfortunate thing, but they just have to kind of plan ahead. And, you know, for all the people, you know, Sam Bradford was a little bit disappointed with what the Eagles did, and he didn't think his job was that secure. And you know, he's the guy now. He might look over his shoulder as much. He shouldn't have to anyway if he's confident in himself. But, you know, I think this may affect his psyche as well. So we'll just have to kind of, you know, move forward.
Okay, well, they will move forward. And, Josh, before Wentz got hurt, though, which was in the second to last play that he was in for, how did you think he looked?
I think, you know, there were some positives and some negatives. If you look at the pure numbers, he was 12 for 24. I think his passer rating was like 44. So pretty bad numbers overall. He had an interception, no touchdowns. So pretty bad numbers. But for a rookie quarterback in his first preseason action, you can't just, you know, the numbers don't tell the whole story, as the saying goes. So you have to look. He had great poise in the pocket. He looked like an NFL quarterback. He talked after the game how football is football. And, yes, the game is a little bit faster, but playing in college and playing in the pros, he didn't see a lot of differences. And there were a couple wide receiver drops also. I'm sure we'll get to that in the show a little bit, talk about some of the other players who played well and who didn't play well. Yeah, the wide receivers were really disappointing to me. Obviously, their best wide receiver, Jordan Matthews, didn't play due to an injury, but Josh Huff and Nelson Aguilar did not look good in the game. So there were some wide receiver drops, so that skews his numbers a little bit. You know, he could have gone 15 of 24, then you're looking at a 60% completion percentage, something like that, as opposed to 50. So there were some drop passes, and he, you know, made an errant decision on the interception. He probably should have taken the sack instead of throwing the pass there, but he hit Zach Ertz over the middle for a nice play, and he made some crisp, clean passes, got the ball out of his hands quickly, and looked, as I said, poised in the pocket, looked like an NFL quarterback, and you could see why the Eagles made all those moves they did to move up to get him at number two. And I think that overall, I would give him, I would say, like a B-plus grade.
Yeah, I like you pointed out the poise he had. I mean, he did make mistakes, obviously, but he looked like he belonged out there, certainly. Gordon, your impressions of Carson Wentz before he gets hurt?
Yeah, before he gets hurt, I mean, really, you take away that you can't really blame him, the drops on him. I mean, he seemed a little jacked up, and he was throwing high a little bit. But, you know, NFL receivers have to pull in ones that are high and low and behind them and everything else. You know, anybody who played with Donovan McNabb can remember, everything can't be right between the numbers in stride. I mean, you're paid to catch the ball in different places. And they, you know, if it's on your hands, you should catch it. And a couple guys should have caught a few balls from him. And so really, I think you take away the interception. I don't quite know what he was trying to do there, what he was looking at, but, you know, the interception was disappointing. You take that away, I really thought it was a solid outing. I mean, I like the way he ran with the ball. I liked his release a lot. He got rid of it really quick. And he seemed to have a good feel for things. He seemed comfortable. I really felt that you take away the interception. I wasn't, you know, the stats were really skewed by the drops, like Josh said. You take away the interception, you know, and I guess obviously they probably have sat and gone over that interception ad nauseum, and it's just a shame. Again, he can't go back out there and build on what he did well and correct what he didn't do well until maybe the fourth preseason game. Overall, yeah, I guess B-plus is a pretty good grade. I think he didn't do anything wrong. But nobody's getting open. There's a couple times he tried to go deeper to a guy. He had to throw a little sooner than he wanted, but in a few occasions. But you take with the interception, I think he played fine.
You know, Doug Peterson said that he wanted Wentz to hurdle the guy that time when Wentz got flipped over head over heels, and that's not the advice I'd be giving him. I wasn't too crazy about that. I liked his desire, but you don't want to see your quarterback, taking that type of hit. And that's not the one he got hurt on. He got hurt later. But let's move on. Carson Wentz became the big story. But really, the big story before Carson Wentz, and maybe in terms of the impact on this season, really is a bigger story. And, Josh, that is the news that Lane Johnson, by all, it hasn't happened yet, but even he now says he's expecting to be suspended for 10 games for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policy. Josh, how much of an impact will this have on the Eagles? And we're going to assume it's going to happen because he said he expects it to happen now. To lose Lane Johnson for 10 games.
Yeah, that's a huge loss. He's their second best offensive lineman after Jason Peters. He's been a really good player for the last couple of years. They drafted him with a high draft pick, and they expect him to replace Jason Peters at left tackle, moving from right tackle to left tackle eventually after Jason Peters retires. So I think that it's a huge loss for them. They're not very deep at offensive line. That was something I really noticed in watching this game, is that they really struggled in their second and third units on the offensive line. They don't have a lot of good backups. That's something that used to be a strength for this team. They used to have a great first unit under Donovan McNabb, and even at the post-Donovan McNabb years, they had a great first unit, and they had some really good backups as well. That's not a strength for this team anymore, and you could argue that – I actually argued that instead of moving up to take a quarterback, since you already had Sam Bradford there, they probably should have taken an offensive lineman with that first pick and had someone there instead of taking an offensive lineman a little bit later. Their rookie, can't pronounce the name, Simulu?
Big V.
Isaac Simulu. He didn't look so good in the preseason game. He's a rookie, so they really don't have a lot of depth on the offensive line, and that's going to be a huge blow for them in those 10 games, and it's more than the first half of the season. So I think that you're going to see this team really struggle replacing Lane Johnson, and Hopefully, maybe there's a slight chance he doesn't get suspended. But as he said, even he said he thinks he's going to. He doesn't. The reports came out. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. He looked up on an app apparently about something he was taking and thought that it didn't have performance enhancing drugs in there, but apparently it didn't have all the ingredients on there, and it did. So, and the NFL Players Union isn't backing him up. So I think that it's a huge loss for this team, and a team that maybe could have competed in a weak NFC East is now going to struggle to compete because the offensive line is really something that you really need. You need to be good in the trenches on the offensive line and the defensive line, and they're going to struggle on the offensive line without Lane Johnson.
Yeah, Gordon, is it fair to say, you might have a different opinion on this, but with Jason Peters, you know, in slight injury decline, we'll call it,
right.
Is Lane Johnson the best player at his position on the Eagles' offense?
Is he the best tackle on the team? Is that what you're saying?
No. Is he on the offensive side? Is he the best player at his position? In other words, is he a better right tackle than, you know, Sam Bradford is a quarterback than Zach Ertz is a tight end? I mean, is he the best position player at his position that they have?
I was never quite as high on him as everybody else is. I think he still has I still think his best years are ahead of him. He's done some good things. But until he settles in at left tackle, we really don't know. I think he's a pretty good right tackle, but he's not a Pro Bowl caliber right tackle. So, you know, I would say tough call. I if you want to make this dead argument, I guess you could make it. I don't know if he's better at tackle, right tackle, than Zach Ertz as a tight end or as, you know, they don't have, you know, or as Kelce is at the center. But he certainly ranks fairly high at his ranks pretty high as a tackle, and if you're looking at it from a more objective league-wide standpoint.
It's okay. I just want to ask you that just popped in my head. So let's go. Looks like plan A, based on what they did in practice yesterday, or option A right now, is to move Alan Barber over from left guard to right tackle, and they put Sayamalu in at starting left guard. At least they did that in practice yesterday. Is that what you expect them to do? Is that a good option, or do they have another good option, better option?
I thought that would be plan B, just because Sayamalu is a rookie and Barber has worked a lot with Peters, you know, to his left, and Kelce to his right. He's been there for a while. He was there last year. And I would have thought maybe that's something you kind of go to second or maybe even third. But I think the first option that kind of popped into Peterson head was the first option that popped into my head, which was, you know, you have a guy on the team from 2012, which was the last time Peterson was on the staff, Andy Reid's last year. Dennis Kelly was a rookie, fifth-round pick, and he started nine games at right tackle. And I'm sure he's thinking, well, you know, he started nine games at right tackle, and he kind of held his own. And maybe it's a chance for a guy who, before this, would have been on the bubble to make the team. Let's look at it. Let's give him a shot at right tackle, and we can leave everybody else in place. But he did not look good. I mean, I don't know if he was the right tackle when Wentz got hit or not, but I know there was another time for a sack. I think one of the times when Chase Daniel got sacked, he was basically just somebody went around him like he was standing still, and you can't get through a season like that. So I think they saw that happen with Dennis Kelly, and I think when they hit the practice field, that became plan B or C, and they are throwing Sayamalu into the fire and Alan Barber into the fire a little bit too, by, you know, telling him to be a starting right tackle. Tackle is a lot more difficult to play, particularly when you've been a guard for a while now. He was a versatile backup type guy in the league for a while before the Eagles kind of made him a guard. He was a guy who had experience at tackle and even center a little bit, but to tell him now you're going to be a starting right tackle, I'm sure he's going to give it his best shot. And another guy's a third round pick, who's more drafted on his upside, Sayamalu. I don't know if they really expected to even really dress him much on game day early in the year. Maybe he would work his way into being like the eighth lineman on game day if they dressed eight because of his versatility. So They're looking at that. You know, they have other guys. You know, Andrew Gardner has played before. He could play a little bit of tackle. And, you know, Matt Tobin can play a little bit of tackle and guard. I put play in quote marks. I mean, these guys have been here a while. Originally, when I projected the 53, I think I said out of that group of Kelly, Tobin, and Gardner, maybe one of those guys would stick. They do have the guy from TCU, Vitae, that you mentioned before. He looked like he has a long way to go. I'm sure he makes the team. He was a draft pick, as a fifth-round pick, so I don't think they cut him loose, but I don't think they really have to give him many snaps as the season begins. So, yeah, I guess they're going to go into this next game, you know, practice this way this week, go into the next game and see how it looks. And if they don't like how it looks, they're going to keep going. Peterson was pretty clear. He thinks he has the body. And I think he's trusting his offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland, on that. Because Stoutland has spent a lot of time. Remember, he was here with Chip Kelly. He spent a lot of time with a lot of these guys. Spent a lot of time invested in Tobin and the other guys I mentioned in developing them into what he thinks are serviceable, at least backup-type guys. And I guess he's trusting him right now. And he says, yeah, these guys can cover it for you. But, you know, ultimately – I don't know if Howie Roseman is thinking the same way. He might be thinking, you know, who are some veterans out there who may not survive the final cuts on their teams, and is there somebody out there better than what we have that we could bring in? It probably wouldn't be anybody who's cut loose until the final cuts, because just bringing in some second-tier type guy really wouldn't help them. So it's yet to be determined, but, yeah, that's plan A right now, and I think a lot was determined on what Dennis Kelly didn't do.
Yeah, you know, we'll see what happens in practice tonight. If they stick with that lineup, that practice starts at 7 o'clock. It's an open practice down at the link. It's the last open practice. There are only two of them. Dennis Kelly did have a guy blow by him, and as did Andrew Gardner on left tackle. On the play where Wentz got hurt, it's unclear. The guy was a blitzing linebacker, and it's unclear if that was Kelly's responsibility or a running back or. Maybe it was a missed line call and picking him up. I don't know. And Wentz certainly didn't seem to recognize it either. So we don't know that. Josh, you brought up the depth on the offensive line. You know, we used to make fun of Andy Reid for drafting all those offensive linemen. And Gordon knows he always got that guy from BYU in like the fifth round. Some lineman from BYU or Utah or somewhere out there would be picked. But, you know, the last 2 years, they didn't draft any offensive linemen, not counting 2016. 2015 and 14, they drafted no offensive linemen in any round. And, of course, we can go back to that Danny Watkins first-round pick, and they're really paying for that now. So I'm glad you brought up the depth. Josh, and by the way, I should plug my column on PhillyFanatics.com, which is Backup Plan Inadequate, which talks exactly about the impact of Lane Johnson's suspension or pending suspension on the Eagles and whose fault that is and why it is. And speaking of responsibility and fault, Josh, you pointed out that Lane Johnson is sticking with the I didn't do anything wrong and blames the NFLPA for not supporting the players more. How much are you accepting this? How much do you agree with them? And how much do you think I won't bias you one way or the other. What do you think of his, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, and the NFLPA should be supporting me more on this?
I think it's bogus. I mean, I think anytime a player gets caught, there's a saying, guys in, not that he's going to prison or jail or anything like that, but guys, you know, there's no, there's a line in Shawshank Redemption, a great movie, where they say, I'm the only innocent man and only guilty man in Shawshank, Morgan Freeman says, you know, everyone thinks they're innocent. So, I think that players know what they're doing. They should know what they're putting into their bodies. If I was a professional football player, or professional any sports player, I would make sure I know what I'm putting into my body and make sure ahead of time that there weren't any performance-enhancing drugs. I would have people around me supporting me that would know what goes into different supplements and stuff like that. So I think that he's definitely guilty in this case, and he's trying to say he didn't do anything wrong to try to get out of the suspension, but I think that he's guilty and he probably knew what he was doing, and unfortunately for him and the Eagles, it's going to cost them. And you talked about the depth on the offensive line, really a big mistake not drafting anyone in 2015 and 2014. That's really hurting them now. And I think if you ask me which way I lean toward, I definitely lean toward that Lane Johnson is trying to cover himself and really just flat out lying about this situation.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. Gordon, you know, Lane Johnson, of course, you know, was already suspended once for 4 games for something he got prescribed from his doctor. You know, so we knew his second violation would be facing a 10. And by the way, after this one, if he does it again, it would be a 2-year suspension. Having already been suspended once, let's listen to his story. The NFL has a whole list of approved supplements, so he doesn't use one of those. He goes outside the approved supplement list from the NFL. He buys, and if you believe him, that it's this amino acid that he tested. We don't know why he tested positive for peptide, but let's go with his story. Like I said, that it's from this amino acid that he bought online, and he then used an app from the NFL Players Association, which all it does, by the way, the NFL Players Association is clear, is check the listed ingredients on the label. So, you know, even if we buy Johnson's story, that he didn't think he was taking anything wrong, that he ran this thing through the app, buying his supplement online, shouldn't the guy, at the very least, having been suspended before, been more careful? I mean, doesn't his story, even if we accept his story, doesn't that also make him look bad, I guess is my question?
My first reaction, I couldn't believe he did it again. I mean, the first time, and I think it was, we talked about it on the show after the first time, and I tried to make excuses for him, saying I blame more the, it's amazing I remember this, because my wife will tell you I can't remember what I did 10 minutes ago, but, I blame the team, the staff, they're talking about the sports science, and that the team, that, and he's a young player, and they should be really on top of what these guys are taking and not taking, and I blame them as much as I blamed him. But the second time, I really got to put it on him. I mean, like you said, there's a list of what he can take and what he can't take. These guys know what they can and can't take. They know what the other players are taking and not taking, and you always have to be leery, and when you do background checks on a guy when you're going into the draft. And by the way, that year that he was drafted, if you go back and look at the first round, what an awful draft that really was, with the exception of a few players. But he was taken fourth overall, and when he's played, he's been okay, but he's been disappointing. That could be a whole other conversation. But he's a guy. He was a high school quarterback. He was a junior college tight end. And then he's a offensive tackle in college, and then in the pros. That's a lot of bulking up to do. So he's been performance enhancing himself for a while, I think, really. I mean, you don't just grow that much, talking about 100 pounds on his frame in that time frame, from being a high school quarterback to a junior college tight end to a top level offensive tackle in college, to the point that you can be drafted, fourth overall. You always have to wonder how a guy got that big that fast, and how much is he doing on his own, or how much was he doing under the watchful eye of, not that I trust a lot of these big time college football programs, but I'm sure they make sure that they take legal substances as well. And one thing is to be concerned about also. Just talking about the team in general, 10 games is a lot of games. Even when he comes back in game 11, I really wouldn't expect much out of him. 10 games is pretty much, in my mind, it's pretty much the season. I mean, you might as well spend him for the season. It's not that I'm saying they should do that, but 10 games is a lot of games for a guy to come back and be sharp, maybe by week 13 or 14, if Eagles are even still in it by then, he could help them a little bit. But just his strength and his he's not going to be in game shape. So I have no sympathy for him at this point. First time around, I was making excuses for him. I was saying, where's the training staff involved? Where's the guidance here? Why is a young player making this mistake? But now there's zero excuse for a guy to have this happen the second time, to kind of deviate from the accepted, the list that's approved, and then to blame somebody else for, blaming the Players Association for not backing him up. It's a little weak at this point.
Yep. Gordon, let me just jump in, because running our show. So thank you for that. We'll talk a little bit more on the other side about who helped themselves and who hurt themselves on Thursday's game. For those listening live, thank you for listening, and check out PhillyFanatics.com for more on the Eagles. All right, we're in archive now. Gordon, I just want to follow up your point, and that is that, you know, for Lane Johnson, I believe the game he would come back for is after Thanksgiving. I mean, that's how far into the season it is. I think it's the Packers game after Thanksgiving, which would be his first game back, assuming he has suspended 10 games. But yeah, and I'm just, you know, there's always been questions about him. And I put it in my column this week, and you just went through it again. It's exactly what I had written, which is, you know, there are always questions about his gain and size. And he's not, you know, he's not overweight. He's added he's a solid 317 for an offensive lineman. He's, you know, he doesn't have the big gut hanging over. Yeah, that's a lot of weight. He goes from he was actually a junior college quarterback. He also played defensive end for a little bit, you know, a more quicker position. Yeah, so there's always been questions. And like I said, my problem is, even if you buy his story, that, you know, and don't think he was intentionally doing something illegal, it's still his responsibility. You know, even if you think it doesn't add up, well, I'll say, all right, let's accept everything he said, and it still doesn't work. It's still his responsibility, and you know, his excuse making is not very good. I'm also not, you know, he works out with Jay Glazer from Fox Sports at Jay Glazer's gym in California during the off season. There's a lot of mixed martial arts guys there, and you know, mixed martial arts, whether you like it or not, is a cesspool of performance enhancing drugs. I mean, if he's using some supplement that somebody there suggested would work for him, my God, that's even dumber than, you know, what he's done, you know, what he has said publicly. Mm-hmm. So we don't know that, but that's a possibility. All right, let's quickly get to some winners and losers from Thursday's game, guys who helped themselves, guys who hurt. Josh, give me one guy who helped himself and one guy who hurt himself from Thursday's game.
Guys, you know, that making the team or guys already established or –
Either way, help either get themselves more playing time or maybe, you know, got themselves on the team. Either way.
Well, a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball. I thought Najee Good and Fletcher Cox. No surprise, Fletcher Cox played really well. He's going to be a staple in this defense, and he looked like he didn't have any trouble adjusting to the new 4-3 scheme instead of the 3-4. So I think he really helped himself, and hopefully he can stay healthy and be a good player for this team. And Najee Good played well as well. And then a guy who I think hurt himself is Eric Rowe. He unfortunately didn't play so well. He played pretty well toward the end of last season in some extra playing time because of some injuries with some guys, and I really expected a lot out of him this season. And you know, it's only the first preseason game, it's only one game, but I think he hurt himself a little bit. He didn't play so well.
Okay. Good choice. I mean, Fletcher Cox certainly expected, but Najee Good's important. Michael Kendrick's hurt already, so he is an important guy. Gordon, somebody who helped himself, and somebody who you can give us maybe two if you want. Two helps and two hurts.
Yeah, mostly on the defensive side of the ball. I really saw some good things on defense. Steven Means, he's a guy who's kind of been around. They picked him up kind of under the radar at the end of last season off of somebody's practice squad. I think he was originally a draft pick at Tampa Bay, and I think it was Carolina's practice squad. You know, I think, and apparently he's played really well in practice as well, and he played extremely well. I think he fits his scheme really well. And I think the guy he's going to put out on the street, not that it really matters to this coaching staff, could be Marcus Smith. And then it's also going to make them really make a hard decision one way or the other on Brian Braman, because he's strictly a special teams guy. And, you know, he's trying to play defensive end now. He was sort of a deep reserve at linebacker before. And, you know, he didn't really do much there. So, you know, I'm not going to knock him for not playing well in the game. He just didn't really do much. And so Steven Means is a guy who helped himself. We talked about Rowe kind of just doesn't seem to mesh with this staff. But a guy who's always stepping up in the secondary, I thought, played extremely well. And I think he might make the team is Jalen Watkins, who they originally drafted, cut, and then brought back last year. I thought he played extremely well. And another guy that I thought might have a hard time adjusting to this defense because he's strictly, I thought, a nose tackle, Bo Allen, seems to really be doing okay as just a tackle in a 4-3. He played really well, and I think he's going to make the team now. So, you know, I think he played really well also. I was a little disappointed in Stephen Wisniewski, and he's another reason, like Dennis Kelly, that they're going to this plan with Siamalo and Barber at guard. I think he's a guy they would look at guard, but he didn't play very well in the game, either at center or guard when he had a chance. I was a little disappointed to see that. Again, he'll hope get more chances, but I think he'll be on the roster when it all shakes out, especially now, but I don't think he really acquitted himself all that well.
Yeah, you know, I'm kicking myself. I was kicking myself afterward for not putting Stephen Means in my game story first impressions, because he did play very well. I thought I agree with you with Watkins. I thought another guy that played really well, and he was going to make the team anyway, but I think he might earn himself some time on defense, is Chris Maragos, who had an interception and played very well on defense as well as on special teams. Ian Watkins might be the third and fourth the backup safeties there. And, you know, he tackled pretty well. He did a lot of good things. I think the guys that hurt themselves, I'll go with Dennis Kelly, offensive line as a whole, but we'll go Dennis Kelly, Andrew Gardner, and maybe every receiver on the team except for Paul Turner. Every wide receiver, Jordan Matthews and Josh Gordon didn't play. Paul Turner came on, and he didn't do anything special, but he had 6 catches for 34 yards during the second half and caught the ball, which is more than I can say for Nelson Aguilar and Josh Huff, who caught 2 passes for 8 yards and fumbled one of them. And I'll tell you what, Reuben Randall, 1 pass for 3 yards, 1 pass bounced right off his hands, and then also picked up a penalty for knocking a fumble out of bounds, which he's considering he's a veteran, should know better. Reuben Randall didn't even look like he wants to make this team watching that game. So, you know, all the receivers to me hurt themselves except for Paul Turner.
It was a Josh Huff fumble that Reuben Randall then, added to the problem by sliding. So it kind of like sums up both of their careers in one play right there. So.
Yeah. So those guys, we'll be looking for them. We don't have much time to talk about this coming game with the Steelers Thursday night, but those are guys who definitely, and I would say, although there were extenuating circumstances, I'd like to see Chase Daniel play better than he did in that first game. Granted, the offensive line was bad, but, you know, he could have played better. All right, which brings us to final thoughts. So, Josh, bat us lead off here on final thoughts.
All right, we didn't get to the Phillies, so I'll talk about the Phillies and a little bit about baseball in general with my final thought. Ryan Howard, I saw him start kind of this hot streak he's on right now. He had a home run and a double against the Padres last Saturday when I was at the game in person in San Diego, and he's hit a couple more homers since then and has really looked pretty solid. You know, he's toward the end of his career, and this could increase his trade value potentially. They could, I believe they have him signed through 2017, so he has one more year left on his contract. So he could be a guy that is offered up in the August 31st trade deadline possibility. So that's something to watch. And, you know, partially you want to see him finish his career as a Philly, but at the same time, he's probably better as a DH in the American League to hit some more home runs and not base anymore, not have that as part of his game, and be able to play, just be able to be the DH and hit some home runs for an American League team to finish out his career and maybe get a couple prospects back for him. So watching Ryan Howard play well and seeing him at first base with Chase Utley. I was at the Dodgers-Phillies game as well. You know, those two guys are good friends, so that was pretty cool to see those two guys when Chase Utley got a single, was on first base right next to Ryan Howard, and those two guys were kind of chatting it up. And then my last point is about baseball in general. I went to a game on Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, and then Friday night and Saturday night. I'm in San Francisco right now. I went to a San Francisco Giants game Friday night and Oakland A's game Saturday night, and just, you know, America's pastime, baseball, great sport to watch. And I've now been to 18 baseball ballparks. My goal to get to all 30 over the next few years. So it should be fun. It's been a fun past week watching baseball.
Well, you've certainly got a lot of places. And Ryan Howard's resurgence is the lead item on my Phillies notebook, Blast from the Past. And we should point out Chase Utley making his first return to Philadelphia on Tuesday. First return since being traded just a little less than a year ago. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, one more guy quickly to get in. I thought played really well, and I was a 7th-round pick, Joe Walker, a linebacker, who I was disappointed they took him instead of Tyler Matakevich from Temple. They're similar-type players, but I thought Joe Walker played pretty well also, and he might have made a step toward making the team as a backup linebacker. My last point is on the Olympics. you try to get into it because my daughter's kind of watching it for the first time. You know, a lot of swimming has been exciting, and she likes the gymnastics. But, so, you know, there are some athletes robbed at gunpoint last night, which is one of the things that was a concern going into the Olympics, you know, about Rio and a lot of problems we're having there. And, you know, some things have happened with Israeli athletes that have been extremely disappointing. You know, athletes not wanting to ride the bus with Israeli athletes to the opening ceremonies. And you've had, we had a Saudi judo athlete forfeit her match, I think, instead of going against an Israeli. And then lastly, there was a match, an Egyptian against an Israeli judo, and the Israeli guy won. It's the judo version of a knockout, and he went to shake the Saudi, Egyptian's hand, and he extended his hand for what I understand was maybe close to a minute, and the handshake was not received. The Egyptian didn't shake his hand, and you know, these things kind of, you know, you read about them and people are kind of disgusted. And I know when it happened, there were some jeers in the crowd, and that's kind of it. It's not the big stories. It's not the Michael Phelps stories. But if, could you imagine if he did shake his hand, or if those athletes did ride the bus with the Israelis? If, you know, how one gesture can really make a difference, and we'd be talking about such a positive instead of negatives that kind of go under the, that kind of fly under the radar, and that's really disappointing to see go on, you know, along with a lot of little things that go on that we don't see with the Olympics. So, you know, it just puts a sour taste in your mouth. I had a sour taste in my mouth going in after seeing that Real Sports report. That to me was award-winning type journalism. I wouldn't say that about Real Sports. All it really was just top shelf, and you know, I watched it again this morning, and you know, the Olympics, you know, there's been exciting things going on, but when they end, and I'm not going to shed much of a tear after they do.
Yeah, I hear you. It's really the contrast that you talk about what athletes can do, and sometimes they don't even mean to be making a statement, but there was a South Korean and North Korean gymnast, a female gymnast, who took picture together. And it was a big deal. It was like all over the internet and controversy. And for them, it was just two friendly competitors taking a picture together. And but the symbolism of the North Korean, South Korean, and you know, was so welcoming and so different from what normally happens. And you're right, Gordon. You know, if the Egyptian would have shaken hands, what a nice statement that would be, instead of what it turned out to be. And actually, the guy from the Olympic official, when asked about it, said, "Oh, you know, that was progress. Usually we can't even get the Arab competitors to compete against the Israelis. So this was a step forward." And I'm like, oh, that's damning with faint praise right there.
Right.
I guess my final thought is going to be on Doug Peterson, NFL coach, and this will probably be a preview of my column for this coming week. But, you know, his first year as a head coach, and, you know, I'm sure he was well prepared. His guy's been preparing this for a long time. He's from the Andy Reid school, which, you know, is being prepared, and comes into his first season, and he has a plan for his quarterbacks, and his plan was for Carson Wentz to play a lot in the preseason because he wasn't going to play much in the regular season, and he gets hurt. And, you know, the offensive line was built around Lane Johnson, really, as, you know, their cornerstone. You know, he's going to be the right tackle, and then he's going to move to left tackle, and it looks like he's not going to have Lane Johnson for 10 games. Jordan Matthews, their top receiver, got hurt before they even played a game, and you know, we're not sure if he's going to be back during preseason. Buck Peterson signing out to the best laid plans sometimes don't go always according to the way you think it's going to go, and you got to tear up those plans and adjust, and we're going to see how well Buck Peterson adjusts on the fly here. So that's it for this week's show. Lots of Eagles talk. Josh, thanks for throwing some baseball there. Appreciate it. And with a little Olympics in the end and our final thoughts. Next week we'll be talking about the Steelers game with the Eagles, and who knows what else is going to happen this week. You never know. So check out PhillyFanatics.com. Eagles stories up there now, Eagles column. We're going to have, obviously, a preview on the Steelers game. Philly's notebook up, including the Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jim Tomey stuff, and there'll be a whole lot more. So thank you for listening, and thank you for Gordon Glantz. Josh Landsberg doing a great job. I am Eric Fisher, and we will talk to everybody next week.